because the purpose of meditation is like rubbing sticks together to produce fire. And they wanted to produce fire in primitive days. They, among other things, they rub two sticks together and kill fire is produced. If they stop in the middle, then they will not be able to make fire at all. So they have to rub until they've got necessary temperature to produce fire. And the same way, when we practice meditation, we have to keep mindfulness always, so that one moment of mindfulness is supported by the other moment of mindfulness, and so that we gain momentum and so realization could come to you. So mindfulness, of being mindful, of keeping mindfulness always, is also very important for the meditation. And here, Malanka Buddha said, I will be mindful. And then, I will be with energy that dissipates defilement. The Kaliya for this is Atati. And Atati, the basic meaning of Atati is having something with heat. That means something that suits them as a thing. And we are suits meaning making others incorporate, like fire or separating the moisture or wetness. So energy is compared to this thinking thing. When there is energy, when there is effort, the defilements cannot arise in us. Defilements are dissipated. Defilements are hidden and to separate. So energy is supposed to that kind of hidden. So with energy that dissipates defilements means I will make effort, I will be energetic, I will not be lazy. And here, to be with energy that dissipates defilements means applying all the four aspects of right effort. Right effort is among the eight factors of path, and it has four aspects. The first one is avoiding unwholesome state, which has not arisen in you before. So avoiding such unwholesome state, what has not arisen in your mind before. Or we can say avoiding new unwholesome state. It is like avoiding to get a disease which you have not had before. So when you know this is a disease and this is deadly, and you will still avoid getting it. And the same way, we should understand that the unwholesome state, unwholesome action, are deadly because they can act to fall lower willful state. And so, we should avoid them as much as possible. And that is avoiding unwholesome state that was not arisen in us. And the other one is avoiding unwholesome state that has arisen in us. That means sometimes we just find some unwholesome state. And the same unwholesome state is said to be those that have arisen in us. And so we should not do or we should avoid doing such unwholesome state, unwholesome action, which we have done before. And the third aspect is to do wholesome deeds, wholesome actions that was not done before. So if you have not practiced giving a charity, you practice it. If you have not three times, three sets, then cut down, and so on, so far. If you have not practiced meditation before, you practice meditation. And this is doing or cultivating wholesome deeds, which you have not done before. And third aspect is making much of the wholesome deeds that you have done before. So if you have practiced charity once, practice it again. If you have chosen sila, put them again. And if you have practiced meditation before, practice again so that you make progress and reach higher stages. So this energy that dissipates defilements means that trying to meditate, trying to be mindful of everything. Then you apply mindfulness to whatever you are experiencing. You are applying all these four aspects of effort. Because when we sit down being mindful, we do not do any unwholesome deeds which was not done before, and we do not do any unwholesome deeds which we have done before. And we are doing something which we have not done before, a good meditative deed, and also we are making progress and the practice that we have done. So when we practice meditation, we are applying all these four aspects of right effort. And then the last one is, we said, with mind directed towards enlightenment. That means with singleness of purpose. The Pali word for this expression is Dasigata. And Dasigata is explained in the commentaries as the first one's mind towards Nibbana, or direct one's mind towards enlightenment. And to direct one's mind towards enlightenment or towards Nibbana really means not to pay any attention to one's life or one body, but just through the practice of meditation, which will lead one to enlightenment. So that means I will have this singleness of purpose. I will not be bothered by my life or by my body, but I will just practice meditation. This is also important when you practice meditation. So when I said, give yourself up totally to meditation, I just mean this. So direct your mind towards atonement, towards enlightenment, and don't pay attention to any other thing. So that is the way to behave when you practice meditation. So here, Mahalingya Buddha said, I must dwell alone, secluded, mindful, with energy that dissipates defilement, and with mind directed towards enlightenment. So please, this new teaching, after hearing that teaching, I will practice meditation, staying alone, secluded, and so on. So he asked the Buddha, the teaching as subject of meditation. The Buddha said, now here in Mahalingya Buddha, what am I to say to the younger monk? How is you, a broken down old man, aged, far gone in years, come to the third portion of your life, ask for instructions in brief? So, Buddha said, what am I to say to the younger monk? Why do you, an old man like you, asking for instructions in brief? The commentary explains that these words of Buddha can be taken to mean either praise or censure. Now, Mahalingya Buddha became a monk in his younger days, but he neglected the practice of meditation, and only in his old age he came to the Buddha and asked the Buddha to give some questions from Buddha. So, what will happen? What am I to say to the young Amma? Am I to say to them also, while you are young, don't pay attention to meditation, to enjoy life, and only when you become old like Malika said that, come to me and practice meditation and something like that. So, if it is prudent to live here, then it is known as a code, a sanskrit. You can put it in another way. So Malaya Buddha is now an old man. Even though he is old, he comes to me and asks for instructions for practice of meditation. And so you young monks also do not wait until you get old like Malaya Buddha. Practice meditation when you are young. And so if it takes to him this, then these words of the Buddha are the truth of Malaya Buddha. So we can take either way the meaning of the words of the Buddha here. So it was in truth or in sanskrit that Buddha said. So here, Malaya Buddha, what a broken down old man is it? Far gone in years, come to this third season of life. So life is supposed to be 100 years. And so the third season of life means about 70, 80, or maybe 90 years old. So he was an old man when he went to the Buddha and asked for instructions this time. Then Malaya Buddha said, "Oh good Lord, I am a broken down old man, aged, far gone in years, come to the third season of my life. Good Lord, let the blessed one teach me teaching in grief. Let the worst speaking one teach me teaching in grief. I might understand the meaning of the blessed one's words. I might become an heir to the blessed one's word. Although I am old, I might understand the meaning of your words, or Buddha's words, in detail. And so I might become an heir to the blessed one's word. That means I might become a noble person or an arahant." The Buddha said, "Now what tells you, Malaya Buddha? Those objects cognizable by the eye, objects not seen, never seen before, which you see not now, nor do you have expectation of that you will see. But you desire, love, or fondness for them? Surely not, love." So by this question, Buddha gives a guiding principle, I mean guidelines for the practice of vipassana meditation. Buddha let Malaya Buddha know that desire, lust, or fondness cannot arise with regard to objects which visible objects which are not seen, which are seen never before, and which are not seen right at that moment, and which people have no expectation of seeing. So with regard to these types of visible objects, there can be no desire or lack or fondness. It can see objects which you have not seen before, which you have not seen in the near past or in the long past, and which you have not seen now, and of which you have no expectation of seeing. So with regard to these objects, there can be no desire or no lack of fondness. So with regard to such objects, there is no need to get rid of defilement, since defilement will never arise with regard to this kind of object. So Buddha said, can there arise desire or lack of fondness for them? And Malaya Buddha said, "Surely not, Lord." This means that desire or lust or fondness can arise only with regard to the things, to the visible objects which are seen before, or which we are seeing now, or which we have expectation that we will see. So, with regard to things you have seen, you can have desire, you can have love, you can have fondness. And with regard to the things we are seeing now, the same that you can have the fire and so on. And also with regard to the things which we have expectation that you will see them, perhaps you can have the fire or love or hunger. So it is only with regard to things seen in the past or seen right at the present moment or things that will be seen in the future if there are anything to do with the present rate of defilement. And that is pretty of the man in whom desire or lust arose, just the expectation that he was going to have that object. His name was Anupitanda. Anupitanda, the name means no woman's male. That means he was not attached to women. It is said that he was born as a Brahma in his previous life. And in the world of Brahma, there were no sensual pleasure. The Brahma can't be attained with one of the full divine abodes or full noble abiding, namely loving kindness, compassion, contemplative joy, or equanimity. So when at the end of his life he came down to the human world and was born as a man, born as a child, he was aware to women. It is said in the book that he cried whenever the mother took him up. It is said he was known as Anupitanda, no woman's male. When he came of age, his parents asked him to marry. But he said, I don't want a wife. But his parents insisted, and so he thought of a device, and he thought of a way out of getting a wife. So he had the sculptor made a golden sculpture, very beautiful sculpture of a woman. And then he showed this sculpture to expecting to his parents and said, if there is a woman as beautiful as this figure, then I will marry her. Because he thought that there would be no woman as beautiful as the statue, and no woman could be found, so he said this. But the parents were rich, and so they sent their men to different parts of the country, of India, to look for a woman as beautiful as that statue. And so people thought that if the statue is made of coal, it is very beautiful. So nowadays you need to a mountain. So they took that statue with them and ran in search of a beautiful woman. And in the country of Agra, they found such a woman. And she was very beautiful, and she was very good, and she was kept on in a seventh fairy's house. And so they went there, and they asked the parents to assess the beauty of the girl. So when the girl came down and sat beside the schedule, it was said that she was more beautiful than the schedule. So the men were very pleased, and they sent word back to the parents and to the man that they had found in the girl even more beautiful than the schedule. When the men heard this, the lust in him was aroused, because he did not expect to see a woman or to have a woman even as beautiful as the statue. Now he heard that there was a woman more beautiful than the statue. And so he had lust in his mind, and he said, bring her quickly. So the man got the girl, but unfortunately the guy died on the way, because it was about 500 or 600 miles apart, and maybe they have been trained by class and so forth, and those are not good. And she was very good, and so she got sick on the wheel and she died. So while the man had died, the girl had died, she was so depressed, so sad, that he could not sleep, he could not eat. And so they were so good, and we had compassion for him, and so we went to his house and asked what had happened to him, and then he was from the Buddha was told about this person, Buddha delivered the sermon, or Buddha offered to invest, and hearing this verse, after hearing this verse, that man became his Lord Abana. And that verse sounds like this: from endearment springs grief, from endearment springs fear. For him who is wholly free from endearment, there is no grief, much less fear. So the sadness comes out of endearment, out of attachment. So he who has no attachment has no fear, or no, he who has no attachment has no fear, or no sorrow. So in this case, finally the man did not want any woman for his wife, because he thought he would never feel and never have a woman as beautiful as the surgeon. But when he had that, there was a woman even more beautiful than the surgeon, and he was enamored. He was attracted to that woman, which he had not seen, which he had only heard about. So with regard to objects, we are visible objects, which are seen, or which we are seeing, or which we have a sensation of that we will see in the future, then that arrives desire, lust, or fondness, and all. Buddha asked the same question with regard to the hound. Those hounds cognizable by the ear. Now, cognizable by the eye, cognizable by the ear means real visible objects, real sounds, and not the nothing in your mind, because they will come later. Those sounds cognizable by the nose, those feelings cognizable by the tongue, those tentacles cognizable by the body, and those dhammas cognizable by the mind. Dhammas not cognized, never cognized before, which you cognize not now, nor do you have expectation of, that you will cognize, but you desire lack of fondness for them, really not lost. So with these questions and answers, Buddha wanted us to know that we don't have to do anything to get rid of defilement with regard to objects which we have not seen, which we are not seeing, and which we have no expectations of seeing them in the future. Only with regard to objects that are seen and so on, can there be less attachment final, and so we have to do something about with regard to these objects. And Buddha also wanted us to know that only with the objects we have experienced, or we have expectations of experiencing, can there arise attachment and so on. We are not only attachment. Anger also can arise, delusion also can arise. So defilements can arise only with regard to objects which you have experienced and so on, and so we have to do something about that. And that something is just paying attention, or just being mindful of them when they are present. So when we see something, we have to be mindful of seeing, and when we hear something, we have to be mindful of hearing and so on. If we apply mindfulness at the present moment, when we see, when we hear, and so on, there can be no lust, attachment, or fondness, anger, or delusion with regard to these objects. So, by these questions and answers, whether these are the guidelines for the practice of Vipassana meditation, take care of the present thing, be mindful of it, and don't get upset, or don't get hunger, or don't get delusions with regard to this. Then Buddha continues.